you grew up outside the South, and early in your book, you recount your first experience with Bible Belt views on homosexuality. And as someone who has grown up in Kentucky, I wasn't surprised by that interaction or the viewpoints that, you encountered. But what I found disturbing, actually, when I got into reading the book, were some of the stories of parents and how they rejected their gay children, and in some instances, very violently. And it's almost unfathomable to me that parents would hate their own children. And you say this was overwhelmingly how parents reacted to their children coming out. I'm wondering, what do you think is it that provokes such an extreme reaction, one strong enough even to overcome the natural parenting instinct?
Well, that's an excellent question, and that's something that was very confusing to me since it was really counter to my experience of both religious life and family life. So what Angie's discussing are some pretty gory stories in the book of mothers, you know, throwing themselves off bridges, non-consensual exorcisms. One family actually disowned their lesbian daughter, and that story is in chapter two. And she actually got between her mother and her sister. Her mother found her sister in bed with another woman, and then when Kelly, the person I spoke with, got between them to, you know, break up the fight, the mother turned on Kelly and said, "Why are you standing up for her? Are you gay too?" And, you know, she said yes. And then it was very dramatic and awful, and she left. And the story in the book ends with it being very sad. I'm interviewing her at the LGBT center in College Station at Texas A&M, and this had just happened, and she was very shaken up, and she just felt so sad. And recently, I was giving a public lecture at Purdue University, and it ended up that the LGBT director had moved there. So I got a little bit of follow-up to her story. And as bad as it was, it actually got worse. He told me that after we had done our interview, her parents even went to her apartment and trashed it. So what does that all mean? Why does it happen? And I guess trying to make sense of this, one answer is that conservative Christianity, in its most extreme forms, perceives homosexuality as outside the body of Christ. So therefore, people who are engaged in same-sex activity are sinning. And homosexuality also has what I call in the book a sticky stigma, so that people who are associated with those who are gay or perceived to be gay, parents, friends, family members, also get some of that homosexual stigma. And I spoke with a woman, a mother, who not only was her lesbian daughter kicked out of church for being gay, she was ostracized for having a daughter who was gay. So this is somewhat commonplace in the Bible Belt. And then finally, one thing that makes the stigma a gay person experiences unique is that within the family unit, the gay person is the minority member, and that is unusual. Often, if you think about racial minorities, you're not going to be shunned likely most of the time for being, you know, a racial minority within your own family because you share that same status. So the family hopefully is more of a haven where you learn strategies to resist and you know, deal with the stigma and oppression that you experience on a daily basis. But for the gay person, you're sort of uniquely positioned in the family as an outsider. And that is part of what makes the oppression of homosexuals unique.
And also in the book, you do note that this one example, an aunt tells her niece that, you know, it's not me that doesn't love you. It's just what the Bible says. And you equate that with displacing blame for these feelings onto doctrine rather than it's not the fault of the family. It's just how it is in the world.
Right. I do. I analyze that because I was so confused by that when I was exploring that with that person that I spoke with. And I remember I asked her, I said, "What if you said to your aunt, you know, it hurts my feelings and it upsets me when you don't accept me and my partner at family events?" And the aunt was like, "Well, you know, it's not up to me. It's up to God. You know, I love you." And I thought, wow, you know, that gives her a free pass on considering how she's complicit in psychologically, you know, rejecting and emotionally harming her own niece. And it also lets her off the hook because it's not about her, it's about God. So God is sort of a convenient catch-all for things that are inconvenient.
And you go into great detail on how, because gay men and lesbians raised in conservative Christian families face rejection, isolation, and what they've even been taught is damnation, how they try to become straight, how they even shut down altogether and hide their identity in what you've termed the toxic closet. So what kind of psychological and emotional damage does this cause?
Oh, my goodness. Where to start? Well, it causes damage in almost every area of one's life, because if you can't be who you are, if you can't talk about what's going on, even the mundane day-to-day stuff, it affects the way you present yourself in the world, and it affects how you perceive yourself. So it's going to compromise your interactions with everyone and everything, because you're always hiding something and you're always holding something back. So in the workplace, for example, it could be that you don't get to have the kind of relationship that your coworkers expect. Like, you're not chatting about what you did on the weekend. And then therefore, they may perceive you as rude and standoffish. So it becomes a cycle where you're not included and you're perceived of as causing the problem because you're seen as standoffish. And that's only one small example. It could get even worse. It could be you're closeted at work and you're not very connected with your coworkers then, obviously, but you could be going through something really bad, like your partner maybe has breast cancer and you need to have time off to go help care for her, not to mention it would be nice to be able to put her on your health policy. So all this stuff can just make life extremely stressful in every area, religion, family, social life, neighborhood culture, and workplace, and schools. And then for the children, it's just harrowing. That's the part that I think was really sad to fully comprehend. It's just how traumatic and damaging it is for a young person to feel like there is something different about them and to recognize that at a very young age, and yet not be able to change it or fix it and be afraid to talk about it. So all that stuff gets wound up while a young person's brain is still forming. And then that's terrorizing. So, I mean, it partially accounts for the reason why 1/3 of gay youth attempt suicide. And many, many gay people that I've spoken with have described a suicidal period that they went through when they were figuring out that they were gay.
You know, across the Bible Belt, if so many people are repressing themselves and their personal lives because of how they are afraid other people react to it, that means that there's a lot of things that aren't getting spoken about. So right. How does that affect the perceptions and the general culture, do you think?
Well, it definitely maintains a homophobic status quo. So it means that people in power don't get questioned and that things don't change very easily. That's one way to get a lot of diversity. I talk a little bit about a regional value called personalism, which means presenting the appearance of agreement even when you have differing opinions. And I believe we do that a lot in the Bible Belt. So if somebody says something homophobic or racist or sexist, for example, sometimes, often, folks don't say anything. They don't say, you know, I don't agree with you. That was a racist thing. That was homophobic. I don't participate in those attitudes. We typically don't say that. More likely, we won't say anything or we'll just sort of change the subject. And that's better than agreeing, oh, yeah, those fags are horrible. But still, it sends a message to any gay person or a person of color or woman who's nearby that you know, that it's normal to express those kinds of attitudes. So bigoted attitudes get expressed often and they in the Bible Belt, and they don't get contradicted.
I like that in all the interviews you conducted, you finish with this question: what do you value about being gay? So what are some things people told you?
Oh, that was a lot of fun, because I know you've read the book, and I've used it in class, in a couple of classes I'm teaching this semester, and the response has been extraordinary. I mean, the students are very engaged with the book, and I've had students say, everybody needs to read this book. So that's very exciting to me. So what do people value? So it was nice after hearing all these gruesome stories for us to take a deep breath and think about what we liked about being gay. And there were a lot of things that people liked. And one of the things that people found rewarding and valuable about being gay was that they got to choose their own path, that they weren't being funneled into a track that was already set for them by other people. So that meant that they got to line up with their life and make their decisions and go with the flow and choose their own happiness. And they really found that valuable. For the women, for lesbians, woman after woman after woman said what she valued most was the quality of her connection with other women, with her female partner. Lesbian pairings can be very intense because women are socialized to be extra connecting to one another. So that was something that that women really valued. For gay men, they of course appreciated being with men, but one of the things that came up most often for gay men was that they liked the gender freedom that came with being a gay man, that because they were gay, once they were out and they had dealt with all that, you know, homophobic stuff, if they don't have to pretend to be something they're not. They don't have to police their masculinity. They don't have to pretend to like sports if they don't like them. They don't have to dress in a certain way. They get a little bit more flexibility in how they express their masculinity. So a lot of people appreciated that as well.
You quote early in the book, you quote an Eastern Kentucky woman who says, "We know that fundamentalists are not crazy. They are wrong, and there is a difference." To me, that implies hope for a change of views in the Bible Belt, because if someone is wrong, maybe you can change their mind. But in contrast to that, you also write that there is institutionalized homophobia in the Bible Belt, and we've already kind of touched on that a little bit already. So how do we get past this?
I mean, it's really complicated, because institutionalized homophobia is amongst the hardest to change because it's written into the policies. So in Kentucky, for example, we still don't have a statewide fairness bill. So passing something like that would send a really great message to LGBT folks here in Kentucky that, you know, yes, the state considers you to be a full citizen and supports you. So we work for social change. I mean, I actually think just being out and being willing to talk about your life, just like a normal person, like this is what I did this weekend, this is my partner, and this is her mama, and we did such and such. I mean, that kind of stuff, I think, goes a long way to just simply normalize a same-sex relationship in the eyes of others. Because I think what happens in the Bible Belt, because so many people participate in the don't ask, don't tell culture, that we then are not sharing our lives, and then it still seems strange to heterosexuals. So, you know, although everyone has to come out, you know, it's their own journey and they have to be strategic and careful about how they come out, especially if they're young, the more that we can be out, studies show, experience shows, my book shows, the more contact majority group members have with minority group members, or in other words, heterosexuals have with gay people, the more attitudes change. And then I think, hopefully, institutions will change. I also write in my last chapter about one thing that I think could potentially have a big impact in the Bible Belt institutionally is the repeal of don't ask, don't tell, the military policy, because the military has a strong presence here in the region, and people respect the military. People have family members in the military. So if the military says it's okay to be gay, that will give support to individual family members who can be like, okay, well, you know, if the military thinks it's okay, maybe I should rethink this a little bit about, you know, my son Chad.
Dr. Barton of Morehead State University, thank you very much for speaking with me about your new book, Pray the Gay Away, The Extraordinary Lives of Bible Belt Gays.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.